The House Judiciary Committee at 108. We have present Representative Berkowitz, Bundy, Green, Porter, Rochberg, and Croft. We will be having all sorts of people here. Representative Porter will have to leave about 1:30. And I want to announce that I'm going to be out of pocket on Monday, and Vice Chair Bundy will be chairing the committee. We will be talking to confirming a couple of appointments and a revisers bill on Monday. We have a listen-only teleconference next Saturday, and this will be, most of you, I think, have probably already received notification of that, but it will be the two clergy on either side of the death penalty, and we will be hearing that from Fairbanks. I repeat, we will be hearing that from Fairbanks on a listen-only basis. We have a plethora of amendments ahead of us, and if there are no questions about any of the stack or about the bill before us, we'll get right into those.
Chair, I'm still on version K of the bill.
Yes.
Question that needs to be asked.
And in my absence, in terms of the stack, where are we in that?
All right. We will be starting with the three amendments, should be, I hope, labeled green.
Yes.
They're Chenoweth, K30, 31, and 32, revised. And then we'll go to a fairly large stack of amendments, I guess, Croft, Berkowitz, back and forth, and then we'll come to Rochberg.
Mr. Chairman, I will be having to vacate the premises. I have a large hearing this afternoon.
So would you like to move up the line then?
Maybe if you might want
to. They were in ahead of you. If they have no objection, we can move you in.
We'll bring that to your attention.
All right. Any objection to that by either of you? Okay, we'll move.
That's K-37.
K-37, right. Then we'll follow K-32.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Only in the legislature could that happen.
That's right. Representative Mulder, do you want to join us as we get into this discussion? We may be wanting your expert advice. And no is not expert advice.
If I might have Mr. DeWitt from my office also.
Surely.
Do you have 37?
No.
It just came out.
I have 37.
Yeah, I think the members of the committee have 37, but the sponsor probably.
One's coming.
It's my lady's amendment. Don't be put off by all the words. Page 2. Just go to.
How are you today?
Denny. Just go to page 2 there in that. Von Blanc, that's the substance of one. That's it.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm very lucky.
We're going to proceed, Representative. We are going to proceed with the First Amendment. And I will offer Amendment Number 1. Is there objection?
Check for the state of
discussion.
Yeah, what it is.
Yes.
Right. All right.
Number 1 is K-2.
Number 1 is K-30.
Be too easy. Oh.
Chenoweth, 310-97.
Oh, okay, then wait a minute. I'm not with you yet.
Okay.
Now I'm with you.
There should be a stack of three amendments together.
Okay, I got them. Neglectful here.
This has to do with page 2.
Oops. Green, K30.
Where will I find my, and then we have the rest of these, huh?
Then we'll have a Rochberg, K37, and then the rest of these.
We'll be here a while.
We very likely will.
Okay.
What Amendment Number 1 does is just expand so that there's no question that the builder of such a facility would demonstrate the qualifications and experience necessary to do what is proposed under a private prison operation. that they would build and operate, having demonstrated appropriate qualifications, and that these would be adopted by the commission.
You haven't hit a loss, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Number 30.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's K30.
K30, Chenoweth, 31097. I thought you were listening.
Okay. We were, but we don't have a K30 in our package.
You should have had it for a couple of weeks.
Does it say may not be administratively restricted or limited by the commissioner?
No, this is page 2, line 9.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. We just...
There should be a package of three of them together.
31.
Probably 30? Separate from the real big.
Well, it wouldn't be part of the big package. These came in before the big package.
Relatively contemporaneous with the big package.
All right.
They probably got too much notice.
That's right, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, as long as Representative. I'll wait for them to find it. I just have a question on the amendment.
Representative Roper?
Yeah, you're on page 6, line 6 of the amendment here, by adding by regulations or adopted by commissioner. I would like to ask the maker of the amendment's intention here. It seems to me that this is might protract the ability of the commissioner to be able to go out to bid with an RFP here if she has to write a whole series of regulations and go through the APA, that is to say the Administrative Procedures Act, before she can implement the intent of the bill. So could you respond to that, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, would you restate your question? I know you're on...
On page on the...
2, line 10.
Yeah, on line 6 here it says, and by regulations that are adopted by the commissioner. You were inserting that?
Yes.
And I'm asking you if this would not delay the implementation of the bill by having to go through the Administrative Procedures Act and promulgating regulations that may not be, may be superfluous given the bill. I don't know.
Well, what we meant by that is that there would be regulations established. We're talking about above. How are you going to determine ability of the person who's talking about doing this unless you have regulations to go by? We didn't want to put that in statute. Representative James?
Yeah, if I could help, I think what it means, Representative Roberg, is that any regulations that are currently in place relating to the degree of custody, that which is an issue that is not necessarily to be changed by a new facility. Well, that's the way I would understand it to be.
This actually implies adoption would imply something in the future. Like is that what you're objecting to?
Well, I was trying to understand what the intent here was.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, and it said by existing regulations, that might be more clear. Rather than that they're going to have or regulations. He's wondering if there's regulations according to this piece of legislation, and it's not very clear. See what I'm saying?
Yes, Representative Porter.
I wonder if the maker of the amendment would concede to a friendly amendment adding the language that would then make this sentence say, and by existing regulations that have been adopted by the commissioner.
The only problem with that is that would imply that no new regulations could
come out.
That's
precisely the only way I'll support the amendment, because otherwise I think it would be deleterious.
You have the cart before the horse.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Croft?
Well, I think it is appropriate in this entirely new area that we have regulations implementing a new statute. We're always... required, the regulations are required to conform to the statute, not contradict it, and be authorized by it. Now, that's never a perfect process. There are regulations, as Representative James and I both know from the Regulatory Review Committee, where they stray from that, but that can be corrected. It can specifically be corrected by court action if a regulation goes beyond its enabling statute. But the department is given a large degree of deference in this area, and if they don't even have the normal deference we give them to write a regulation following a statute, I don't understand why we're giving them deference in every other area except the one that they traditionally have.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The task that we're asking the commissioner to perform is to make sure that the agency demonstrates the qualifications and experience necessary if this amendment were adopted.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to provide the degree of care, custody, and discipline to the extent required by the laws of the state of Alaska. Those laws exist.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a new regulation that says, Commissioner, write a regulation to tell us whether or not somebody has the ability to meet an existing law. To the extent that they have to follow their own regulations and any procedures that exist, I'll go for that. But write a regulation to say I have to go through the Administrative Procedures Act to give an opinion on whether somebody meets the law is a little bit cumbersome.
Representative James.
Well, I know, and we're I think that the problem we're having, Mr. Chairman, is in trying to define what kind of what regulations are we talking about. We're certainly at this under the context of this statement. We're not talking about any regulations that are going to be written as a result of this piece of legislation. We're talking about what kind of consideration that the commissioner needs to determine before an agreement with an agency to follow this would be able to do it. And I would think there's another way of doing that. I don't know that this is the right way, but just to get the gist of what I believe this amendment means is that it would say in the discipline to the extent required by the statutory or regulatory laws of the state, which would be in effect at this time. That's kind of what this is trying to say, and it's difficult to get that said and make a lot of sense. I understand that. But I think that the purpose of this number one is certainly clear, that we're not going to take any less quality of treatment, care, or custody than we're currently getting under the laws of our state, including any existing regulations.
Chair.
Representative Berkowitz.
The problem I have with inserting existing regulations is, as Representative James knows, all the regulations are coming under scrutiny, and if some of them are eliminated, there should be confusion as to whether the existing regulations at the time of enactment would preclude us from eliminating regulations down the road, which might have an effect on this. My personal sense is that when you have regulations, what you do is you make any sort of evaluation more objective. There are standards by which the commissioner and the private contracting agency can gauge each other's conduct. But if there are no regulations, then it's an entirely subjective matter, and anything goes.
Representative Porter?
No, I'm sorry. I'm pointing at clocks.
No. Representative.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Representative Berkowitz's great optimism that we're going to repeal any regulations.
You will take that as a
despite person. The fact that we have such extraordinary leadership in a regulatory review committee this time. Nevertheless, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we split the issue. How do you do that? Split the
divide
the question here on this particular amendment, and it may expedite the resolution of this issue before us if we divide the question.
Well, I'll, for the sake of expediency, I will divide the question then. And this will be 1A through line 4, and 1B starting with line 5. And we are now addressing 1A.
Objection.
Representative James.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to try one more time.
On B?
On B.
All right.
On 1B. And that is that I understand, first of all, let me say that as required by the laws of the state, I think is inclusive of statutory and regulatory law. So I don't think that it's really necessary. But if you wanted to make it perfectly clear that you wanted to be sure that you included any regulations, then I think you could refer to administrative law. But even going beyond that, I think that if we don't, we don't expect an agency to enter into an agreement That's going to be changed by regulation before they do it. In other words, that's a way to set it up so no one can qualify. And so I think that that's not what your intent was. I believe that your intent was to be sure that all of the existing rules and regulations are applied for so that the, any agreement that would be made with anyone would be something that was taking care of things the same way as they had been all along. So I understand your reason to do this. I think that under the laws of the state, it's clear that there's statutory law and administrative law, and that that is the laws of the state, so anything that's in effect at that time would be that way. But I wouldn't think they would go out, we would want to allow them to go out and write new regulations so that they could establish that only certain people could qualify.
Okay. Well, let's go back to 1A then. Is there an objection maintained on 1A? Hearing none, 1A is adopted. Now we're back, and we just heard a discussion on 1B. Is there further discussion? Representative Rookberg, excuse me.
Yes, sir, I don't support this because I think Representative James explained perfectly the state of affairs we have. We have existing regulations, and it's redundant here to put it in because it already indicates it's by the laws of the state. I would like to get the sponsor's opinion on this because I do believe that we have existing regulations that are adequate to cover the intent of the bill.
We don't even need to do that. The, in the interest of cooperation, I will withdraw the Amendment 1B.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy I was able to help with one, but I'm going to go to the finance, so.
All right.
I'm back when I can.
That brings us to.
You'll be back 10 minutes.
Sure. There are only a litany of amendments there, too, aren't there? That brings us to amendment number 2, K31, Chenoweth 31097. Starts with page 3, line 3, following line 3. Is there objection?
Object.
There is objection.
Objecting for the purpose of the explanation.
Okay. And so long since I read this, you're going to get the bait for it.
That's my problem, too. I want to make sure.
Okay. This has to do with the fact that if, even though it may be a private contractor for a private prison, the concern is always there that it's being done for the state, and what this says is that there will be an adequate bond to be sure that if something happens, the contractor goes broke for any number of reasons, that the bond would be attachable so that the state wouldn't end up with no prison and a lot of bond indebtedness.
I'd like to hear the sponsor's opinion.
Representative, yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, could I defer to Representative
Don't right. insult your own staff.
Times, I tell you, it's probably more true than that.
Denny?
I'm excited.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Denny DeWitt. I'm staff assistant to Representative Eldon Mulder. What you've got here are performance standards and bonds and insurance requirements that may or may not be appropriate in every case that may be before us. The problem with addressing this statutorily is that you don't have the full range of options for indemnity in front of you to choose from. If you look at the model RFP form that is published by the Department of Administration, you'll find that it requires it in the template, it has insurance requirements, explains what needs to be required, additional terms of condition, bid bond, performance bond, or surety deposit, depending upon what the RFP is for. It's tailored for that specifically. And if you look at the required contract, you will find that Appendix B1 requires indemnification and insurance, workers' comp, general liability, and auto liability, all of which can be required in the RFP and should be. The important thing to, it seems to me, is that we have a process which is covered in the procurement code and in the RFP model and template that's required to be used by the Department of Administration to handle those issues. The problem with putting it in statute, I've not gotten a chance to research it exactly, but we may be in some conflict, but it also limits our options in terms of getting the best surety that the committee might be after.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Representative.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Mr. DeWitt, it seems to me that what this amendment says, like in line 9, is it posts an adequate performance bond and payment bond. Now, that may be necessary under the provision whereas the contractor was being asked to perform under the construction contract, but not under the operational situation, which would be, I think, another type of bonding arrangement, or there would be additional sureties needed under those circumstances. So depending on how the RFP is drafted by the department, the you're advocating the flexibility there, whereas this would rather statutorily tie their hands, I take it.
Mr. Chairman, that's indeed the concern. The concern is also that certain bonds and certificates of insurance can be substantially more expensive than other kinds of sureties that can be brought that are just as protective to the state's interests. So in one instance, while there should be concern, and certainly we have that in our statute regulations and the model RFP, what we may be doing, and we simply don't have all the evidence in front of us, and it's fairly complex to get it there, we may be indeed running the cost of the project up by our choice of instruments as opposed to the instruments being chosen by the offeror and the agency signing the contract.
Representative Berkowitz.
This might better come in the terms of a friendly amendment later on, but why don't we just eliminate the terms performance bond and payment bond and insert surety there, and we've covered everyone's concerns.
I would take that as a friendly amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would only point out if you don't mind.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Are you through?
Yeah, on that point.
Representative Roper.
I think performance bonds are necessary under the construction phase, but the surety I think would be more appropriate to the operational phase. So. But, you know, I was thinking more along the lines, if you wanted to do it, and the sponsor didn't think it was objectionable, is to specify that these particular items that the maker of the amendment is pointing out are for the construction phase of the project, and as with the engineering background, I can appreciate that. That might be more acceptable to the bill sponsor. I don't know.
Well,
if you wanted to do that at all, you know.
I would think that you were thinking about on line 9 and line 13, wherever we're talking about those kinds of things, we're just saying adequate surety, and I have no objection to that. That would then separate any problem you might have between operations. Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, yes, Representative James.
After the sponsor. My concern is that we keep worrying about that we're talking about the providing the operation and the first part of C doesn't say anything about that. It says provide necessary facilities, doesn't say anything about operating them, and so I would believe that all of this language has referred to the construction, not the operation.
Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess I look at this and I understand and I support what you're trying to do, but I would oppose the amendment from the standpoint that, in a way, you're really saying you don't have confidence in the Department of Administration's ability to protect the state because they do this through the bid process. And I do have confidence in them. It still has to come back before the legislature for review. And we're certainly going to hold them accountable for their actions. Beyond that, we may be setting ourselves up for, you'll notice the bill is extremely flexible. And that was by design to try and give the commissioner a full range of options to capture the most savings. We may be limiting our opportunity here in relation to perhaps contracting through a municipality to do a function like this. by specifying the language that you have within this amendment, where it says specifically the commissioner may not enter an agreement with a private agency to provide facilities.
Unless.
Right.
And I would think, Representative Mulder, that if that's a practice that's already being done, they have no objection at all to this.
The department wouldn't?
I mean, all we're saying is surety. They have, that's a pretty wide flexibility. They can do as they wish, but it does require that they do it. From that standpoint, I think from the state's best interest, it would be to insist that they do it, and they may change this, but as far as a new prison is concerned, they will have to supply adequate surety. I don't see that that's a problem. Representative Roquefort.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I see folks from the department and even from Revenue here, they might want to comment on the efficacy of adopting this amendment based on the points made by the sponsor of the bill, as well as the financeability of the bond package that may or may not result in it.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's remarkable to me about the amendment is how little it ties their hands, how general it is. It simply requires adequate bond, and if the friendly amendment's taken, simply adequate surety. Section 2, nobody has quibbled with, and I think it'd be hard to, demonstrates to the consumers, to the commissioner's satisfaction, the capability. And in 3, simply sufficient insurance. If these things weren't going to be done, I'm more worried about it even than I was before. And simply setting general guidelines for them to implement in the RFP. And when Representative Mulder talked about the RFP, or when Denny did, that these things would be required under the RFP anyway. I don't see what the problem is. We're not saying in what form or in what amount the surety must be. It simply must be adequate. And we're not saying under Section 3 what form. We even say bond or certificate of insurance, given as much flexibility, simply sufficient to defend and indemnify. That should be a requirement. I would worry if it weren't.
Representative Mulder.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I would also entertain discussion from the Department of Revenue or Department of Administration, if they're here, in relation to current contracts. If you would entertain such a
All right.
discussion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't think DOA is here, so I think you probably covered that question. Forgive me. I'm sorry, Keith. Well, I'll not speak for them. I think from Revenue's standpoint, it's...
Would you identify yourself, please, for the record?
I'm sorry, Forrest Brown, Department of Revenue.
Thank you.
It seems to me that we do that as a matter of course anyway on RFPs. It certainly doesn't hurt for the bill to specify it, but it's probably not required. That's my opinion.
Okay, thank you. You have, please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Kirk in Department of Administration. Current statutes specify the minimum requirements for bonding and insurance that either DOT under construction or DOA under non-construction are required. There's no limitation, as far as I know, on how much above that minimum you go in a given proposal, whether it's for construction or for services. This RFP would be a blend of both, and I believe that there would probably be a fair amount of discussion between Department of Law, Administration, DOT, Corrections, Revenue, and everyone involved in setting what the reasonable amount of that ought to be in any case. If you had to worry, you may worry about it going too high. The problem in a situation like this, which is a unique kind of an RFP given our history, is knowing how much of insurance effectively to impose upon the proposers without making it unaffordable. And frankly, I don't know that we certainly haven't had that conversation yet, but I think you can rest assured that that would be a fundamental part of putting the proposer together, because the state has got to be concerned about whatever liabilities are out there, knowing there's someone there to take care of those.
I'm sorry, you said, and you think that would do what?
That would be a very important part of the preparation of the RFP.
But not, certainly not a killer or anything that is going to be onerous or time-consuming.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think establishing the level that would be required of proposers could be onerous. I mean, if you go too high, if you require mm-hmm. too much insurance, you'll effectively limit the competition. So you want to strike a balance between protecting the state's interest and not making the proposals uncompetitive or unable to respond to what the state requires. And I think that that's a conversation that has to be had as part of putting the proposal together. I certainly don't know that anyone today knows what those limits should be for this kind of an RFP.
Representative Berkowitz.
It'd be fair to say, though, that inclusion of this provision would clarify any ambiguity regarding sureties with a new sort of entity, private prison contractor.
Mr. Chairman, my sense is I don't know that you could say that's clarity. I think the conversation about what level needs to be required is going to be had, and I don't know that unless you prescribe a specific level, that would probably be clarity. But anything short of that, there's still going to have to be that discussion of balance about how much to ask for.
But that level of clarity can either come about through contractual negotiations or through regulation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berkowitz, I don't think it would be a regulation. It would simply be as part of the RFP. The agencies crafting that RFP would make a determination independently for the construction elements and the non-construction elements about what kind of bonding, surety, insurance requirements above state minimums may or may not be required, if any.
But would it suffice to say that having it in statute, then it's not subject to perhaps changes in regs or even procedures? This would say, yes, you will. And as you said, that might be good because there would be dialogue then between the various involved agencies.
Mr. Chairman, I meant to say that I think that dialogue will happen in any case because okay. the agencies need to be looking out for the state.
So, again, it's not doing anything that you don't already do now.
I believe that's fair to say.
Representative Croft.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Any other discussion?
No.
Oh. Representative Jean.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I agree with a lot. You have had a first question. Did you do a friendly amendment to change it to post-adequate surety?
Yes.
We
haven't voted on that, but...
No, as a friendly amendment.
But I accepted that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. All right. So then I can assume that it says that in number one and also in number two, or number two is really different. So it's only in one place?
Only in one place.
Okay, in one. I guess that a comment I would like to make is that I'm a little confused because three... And I guess it's because I don't understand exactly everything that's ahead of this, because this by itself talks about just facilities, and then it goes on and under C, and then down under 3 it refers also to the operation. So I'm assuming that something in this 3330031 ahead of it relates to something that ties those together. So given that, I don't believe that the statements in here make very much difference, except I think they'll make the chairman feel happier, so I'll support his amendment.
It gives me warm fuzzy. Any other? Yes, Denny?
Mr. Chairman, certainly not to change your euphoria. Our concern, however, is that those issues that Mr. Gerken referred to are already statutory. The problem with this is that the question then, if we again enact them, have we changed the current statutory base? Have we altered it? That's really the confusion we're concerned about. We already have the statutory base. It is not regulatory. They cannot change that through a regulatory action. That is already a statutory thing that this legislature has acted on. So that's where the discomfort comes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a question on that then for the sponsor. if it's already in there and we're doing it again, does that not doesn't that make the people who are evaluating this piece of legislation know for sure that it's already there if it's no other place in this legislation? Is restating it a problem? I mean, somebody tell me what the problem is restating something if it's the same already somewhere else.
Mr. DeWitt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative James, harking back to the days when I was in the bureaucracy, the question I would ask is, what's the new message? If the current statute is not satisfactory, the question then becomes, what is the new message? So, and this is only my personal opinion on how I would approach it, but I think that having worked with colleagues in the department and knowing many of them there, I think they would ask the same question. Since we have it today, the legislature enacted something new, what's the new message? And that's apparently, that's my concern, having worked from a regulatory perspective on things like this.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that, I guess, and I can understand the concern where the sponsor's coming from. However, is it true that what we have before us is something new, where we put out an RFP for construction and operation of a facility, and so therefore aren't we saying that we're going to put out an RFP for construction and operation of a facility, and the existing rules are there, and we're going to restate that the existing rules apply to this? That's not the case.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, the problem is that the preponderance of the people who will be dealing with this issue administratively are not here. They will not have the benefit of the discussion of all we wanted to do was reiterate what was here. In addition, between now and the time they get to decision-making time, there are likely to be other changes, even of the folks who are sitting here. So it takes an awful lot of time to trace back and find out that all we were doing was something benign and reminding. And again, you know, from my personal experience, when one receives one of these, the question is, you know, I've got a statute here that says generally, and a statute here that sort of generally, they must have had something in mind. And so that's kind of how the regulatory process evolves and works. And
is that the way bureaucrats work? I didn't know.
And if I might add, I mean, I have a lot of empathy for your position as chairman of the regulatory review, but also my former colleagues in the administration, trying to do business, sort of not everybody having sat at the table at the same time. Goodness knows it's difficult enough for all of us to walk away from this table with a consistent understanding of what happened here, but when other people who aren't at the table are required to do what you've chosen they do, it's even more difficult.
We're checking now to see, did you cite where this was?
No, I didn't. Where is the procurement code? Have me without my specs.
Mr. Chairman, while they're checking,
Brookford.
I do have, I don't mean to confuse the issue or anything else, but just for purpose of discussion, I have a friendly amendment I would offer to add some meat to the bone that Mr. DeWitt's talking about here. I just, if I could just read it conceptually, maybe we could talk about that while they're giving
right.
the citation. I would say it would be subsection number 4 under line 16. It says, the terms and conditions of RFPs formulated under this subsection shall not be constructed so as to limit competition. Now that's a message.
Well, that certainly should be a wake up call, yes.
Because I believe the gentleman from the Department of Administration brought a very clear point here that you can put together certain specs in an RFP that basically lead people down the road, or what they do is limit the competition or the number of people that may be otherwise qualified bidders by drafting the specs in such a way that they disqualify bidders. So I don't know. That's a kind of another topic, but They just brought it up.
Yes, and we could say to alleviate this concern that this in no way will
be redundant.
Be redundant or conflict with existing law, but Representative Croft.
Mr. Chairman, I just can't keep track of when we're trusting the department and when we're not. The we started out having complete faith in the department and complete discretion, and now we're worried that they're going to use the words adequate surety or sufficient insurance to stifle this. It seems to me it's neither complete trust of them or complete distrust. It is some confidence that they'll do their job, or if they don't, that the normal processes will work. This gives, in my opinion, adequate assurance that they're making these assurances, but doesn't tie their hands or allow them to be allow them to do mischief.
Any other discussion? Representative James.
Well, no, forget it. I'll have the same comment at some time later.
All right. Accepting on line 9 the friendly amendment to replace the words after adequate, delete those, and put surety, is the objection maintained?
Yeah.
There is objection, and we have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Bundy?
Yes.
He's coming in the room.
Your vote.
My vote.
Your
yes.
vote on 2. Amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 is yes.
Representative Porter. Representative Wilford.
No.
Representative James.
Yes.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Berkowitz.
Yes.
Chairman Green.
Yes. Amendment number 2 has passed. And that
without me.
Without you. And this shall be remembered.
Without me.
Meat? Oh, without meat. I'm sorry.
No meat.
See how it feels?
It's the second time.
Chairman, I don't take it personally.
I see. All right.
I've been there before.
We've had so much stuff go through here the last month that we need a little levity. That brings us to amendment number 3, revised. There may be in your packet a shorter version of Amendment 3, which has been
37.
Number 3 revised.
Formally.
Yeah. Formally. It's actually a longer one now. It has revised on it.
Ah, gotcha. Yep. That's 32.
And we don't need old 32 anymore.
Right. Old 32 is out.
Yeah. Out with the old and in with the new.
It was a good old friend.
It is much longer. I have to read more.
In effect, what this does, it says that the limitation of a correctional facility would be in a city or in a subdivision of the borough, subdivision of the state, that before a site could be, there would be a review committee, the site selection, and once the site selection is made, that before they build the prison, they would have to have an affirmative vote of the citizenry within a two-mile radius of the perimeter of the facility to be built. And this, in effect, then establishes a local, I guess, a veto power. Representative Berkowitz.
I have a question for you,
yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman. You initially talked about within the municipality and was shifted to 2 miles. Is there an explanation for that?
Well, what we're saying is that we're trying to say instead of the municipality, a total vote of the entire municipality would be a total vote of the affected people by that. And 2 miles seems to be a reasonable radius that says if you're beyond that, you're probably not adversely affected.
My question would be,
just ask for opinions.
It seemed to be a little difficult to figure out which voters are within the 2 miles and which weren't, especially at the edge of the district. And
it would be. It would be with. I don't know that it would be that difficult, though. The perimeters would be established. This is the perimeter of the proposed facility. and you go 2 miles in any direction from that.
Do it with them.
Do it on the map.
Yeah, do it on the map.
In fact,
protractor.
I've done a similar type thing. This is pretty rough because I'm not even sure that that's the exact location of one possible site, but it would be the same thing if it was up here, you'd strike an arc, or if it was out in Girdwood or wherever it might be. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question to increase my understanding of in an unorganized area. They're planning a prison up by Glen Allen, and there are 6 people within a 2-mile radius. If those 6 people have...
You'd need to get 4 of them. Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out how this is going to work. And so I'm visualizing, because it says that the commission may not enter into an agreement to provide necessary facilities. Okay, that means that he's already put out the RFP. This is my assumption. Already put out the RFP and have all these bids that came in. And now, and I assume that these bids will have a site with them or not, but I would think that they probably would.
Mm-hmm.
And then that means that you have to put that out to the public that are 200, that are 2 miles around that. Hopefully they don't know who these bidders are, because they could choose the bidder they wanted in that process. I see a flaw in that process, and so you know, here I am the person that really most likely wants to get the public to make decisions whenever possible, and I somebody had to give me the what comes first, second, third, and fourth to see what kind of information we've gotten and how far we've gone with the process before we get the people to agree that this is okay to put it there.
Well, if I might, Representative James, if there is the process to build a facility, there will be a site selection before the facility is designed, because you've got to design the facility for the prospective area that you're going to put it in. If you're going to put it on a hillside, it might be a different design than if you're going to put it in such as Valdez or Seward.
Mr. Chairman, I object to your use of that
hillside
potential example.
So that once you've selected the site, it's at that time then, and that's where this unless comes in, then the commissioner finds out, is this site selection going to be satisfactory with the affected personnel? And if it is, then you put it out for bid. If it isn't, then you better find another site.
Okay, let me see if I get you then. That means the commission is going to decide the site. Who's going to pick the site? Who's going to pick the site? The commissioner's going to pick the site where this is going to be? Whose land is
the
it going to be?
Well,
who's going to do this? Who's going to make? Who's going to find? Locate the site?
The commissioner may not enter into an agreement until the site has been selected and approved.
But who selects the site and puts it out for approval?
That would be up to a volunteer, such as in this case, or anybody that.
Who pays for the election?
It's stated in here, the city or the subdivision of the state.
Okay, I'm not trying to be argumentative. It is, and so I really agree with your thought here. My problem is the structure of how and when and who does this is not clear to me, and I need to have that explained to me how that would work.
Well, I thought I did. The commissioner, it says, and that's what we're saying. And the commissioner would be involved. It's not going to be a prison built without the commissioner's knowledge or approval. Can't issue or can't enter an agreement to do that.
Okay, it says
until they've got a site selection that has been approved by the people who are affected.
Okay, I didn't read. It's here. Unless the commissioner initiates and completes the site selection process. So. If I could follow up on that, then that means that actually what that means is that the cost of the land is not going to be part of the bid document.
Oh, I don't know.
Which would
that.
Preclude people from bidding and using existing land that they own.
I don't know that would
be right.
Okay.
No, why would it preclude them?
Well, that's why, Mr. Chairman, if you'll...
Yes, Representative Roper.
If I might enter in here, I mean, well, the point Representative James is making about this amendment is right dead on accurate here. What you're doing here by injecting the commissioner in the site selection process is completely throwing out the RFP process and presupposing that there'll be a site selection prior to any competition for the construction or an operation of a separate facility. Ergo, then it has to be on pre-selected land, either purchased by the state or some public land that's available for some other way. So this does an extraordinary disservice to the state by limiting the areas in which you have the choice. Now, Mr. Chairman, I would like to, just to help clarify this process, and I think this speaks to, because of my familiarity, I'm very familiar with the RFP-type bidding processes for buildings and so forth in my own personal background. But I would like to ask the sponsor a question along this line that might help shed some light on this. That is to say, I'm curious about how this particular language, and matter of fact, much of the bill would reflect on the statutory authority of the Department of Corrections to procure other facilities, for example, CRC beds and other soft beds that may come into play in terms of their requirements. Now, do this statute here, what impacts for the statute in the bill, Mr. Chairman, if I might direct it to Representative Mulder, what impact does it have on all of the RFPs that the Department of Corrections may enter into and their whole scope of acquisition of real property?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roper, you've hit upon one of the reasons why I don't believe this is perhaps the best. While I'm sympathetic with the direction of what the chairman's trying to accomplish, I don't think this amendment really gets you where you want to be. You do create a real problem, as Representative Roper referred to, in relation to halfway houses. Within here, you specify or talk about a correctional facility may not be constructed. Going here specifically about correctional facility, and under 33 AS 33 30 901 subsection 4, correctional facility or facility means a jail, prison, camp, farm, halfway house, group home, or other placement designated. You do create a whole host of problems by making this amendment in relation to other things that are already existing out there. I think the real focus, what Mr. Chairman, and this is an issue that you and I have visited about, I think what the nuts and bolts of the discussion here gets down to is it's really a municipal issue. It's a municipal concern. And to that end, you know, within statute, we have already specified for them in AS 2940040, in accordance with a comprehensive plan, that the provisions of governing the use and occupancy of land that may include that are non-limited zoning regulations. You know, we already provide for municipal governments to provide their own regulation on what should and shouldn't be and what's appropriate where. And if they want to establish further hurdles or hindrances or peer review panels, if you will, that's appropriate within the municipal charter and within municipal government. And I certainly don't have a problem with that. But I think it's we're fettering the hands of state government unnecessarily to try and have state policy determined by, as you yourself pointed out, Mr. Chairman, four people. I mean, there can be a common good that benefits the state, which could be thwarted literally by four people. And I don't believe that's necessary. I think it sets up a dangerous precedent within state law to do that. Beyond that, Mr. Chairman, what we're doing within this provision is also setting in policy something, a hindrance to a private facility. And I know this is not intentional, but we're putting a binder upon private facilities that don't exist on public facilities. Currently, under state law, the commissioner could place a prison anywhere she wanted by emergency regulation without consideration of municipal ordinance or anything like that. So To be consistent, to be fair, I mean, I understand what the chairman's trying to get to, but I don't believe that this quite gets there. And I think that it is appropriate for municipalities to have discussion and perhaps put into their own municipal code ordinances something that will deal with this situation.
Well, I thank you for your explanation, but I would take issue with the fact that it would do away with halfway houses and all that existing, because the last sentence says this restriction does not apply to construction within the perimeter of the correctional facilities in existence before the effective date of this act. So anything that's existing is all right. Now, as far as what may come, excuse me, Denny, can I have his attention? Thank you. As far as what may come, I think, yes, it does. It is incumbent upon, and you use the example of four that we talked about in a very, very rural area. Is it in the state's best interest, I mean, the largest state in the union, that we can't find a place that isn't going to adversely impact the people that are closest to it? And if those four out of six that are going to be there are adversely affected, move it a little bit and still have the opportunity to build. I mean, there are a lot of places that aren't anybody. There are a lot of places that are close to municipalities that there aren't anybody. This presupposes, by your objection, that there will be objection to the facility. That tells me right away there must be something in the public's interest, at least those that are affected, that they should have a right to say no. I mean, if they're going to build it next to your house, would you say no?
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, you know, when our whole country was established, there was discussion along this lines. And the greater public good has always been a consideration of the Founding Fathers from the beginning of time. Hence the power of eminent domain. You know, nobody particularly wants a road going down their backyard either, because it has the tendency to devalue property. And yet roads we've considered to be an integral part of society, a necessity. Unfortunate as it may be, prisons are a like occurrence. If we're going to determine that we need to lock people away, we have to have prisons to put them in. And they do, to that end, meet a public need. And to further that end, they should be at least strategically located so that they provide the service that's necessary. In this relation, I know I'm very sensitive to the concern that you have, and I am not saying that South Anchorage is a particularly good location. I'm very sympathetic to that. However, I think the municipality of Anchorage can and should take steps to if the commissioner were ever to decide a facility should go there, that they should take steps to be able to ensure a public process that is responsive and that is fair.
And you use, and I don't want to make this a debate, but you use the right of eminent domain, such as a highway, and there are provisions that where alternate routes exist, that they do that. They don't just bulldoze through the middle of a building saying, by God, I got the right of eminent domain, which they do have, but they don't do it that way. They do make exceptions, and they do condemn, and they do compensate. I don't believe this bill wants to go to the point of compensating those that are adversely affected. They do that in eminent domain and highways. Representative Brookberg.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that I agree with Representative Mulder. I would also point out to the committee that there has been testimony in this building this year that the Department of Corrections has endeavored to acquire CRC soft beds in the Matt Muska Valley and in the Kenai Peninsula, City of Kenai area, both of which have been turned down by local groups. As a matter of fact, and here's the interesting thing, which speaks to the point that Representative James brought up, that the City of Kenai is subsequent to this turn down of a one location in their community has gone out and identified nine different site locations that may be satisfactory for a CRC bed. But Mr. Chairman, the problem with that, you might say, well, that's exactly what you intend to do with this amendment. No, we can put a number of sites on a ballot and perhaps choose that, and so forth. But Mr. Chairman, what the statute would do would restrict would virtually halt the corrections business in the state of Alaska, because, Mr. Chairman, that would require that you do build a new brick-and-mortar facility at this then-publicly selected site acquisition, for which the city of Kenai would be coming down to the legislative doors, knocking on our doors, and asking for $5 million to build this facility, which is baloney. Because what happens when you're using CRC bids is you've got to go out, acquire an existing, for example, multifamily dwelling or another commercial type dwelling, and convert the use of it into this type of use to make a cost-effective recycling of a particular commercial property so it can cost-effectively provide the beds we're looking for. In other words, you can't go out there unless you have lots and lots of money and start out with a raw dirt site and build soft beds. You can't do it. It's impossible. It's literally financially impossible. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, what I'm suggesting is your amendment, unfortunately, will halt the entire correction business in this state. It'll halt it at a dead stop, and it could jeopardize the public safety of the state, literally. I mean, overnight, because of this amendment. And I don't think that's your intention here. Absolutely not your intention. But I mean, that's one of these unintended consequences, and it really hasn't been thought through, because this will halt the acquisition of soft beds in this state.
Representative Roekberg, I certainly bow to your superior knowledge of real estate matters. However, you must be aware that there are several sites that are begging for this location. So to say that it's going to halt any correctional facilities in the state is an extremely gross and inappropriate statement to make in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, I said soft beds. I didn't say other. I was talking about the CRC
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just ask either Representative Mulder or Denny, Section 4 enacts what numbered statute? I'm possibly, because I'm new, a little confused. Section 2 says that it's 3330043, but Sections 3, 4 on don't give me the section number that they implement, that they enact.
Denny, Mr. DeWitt?
Those are uncodified statutes. If I might just step back for a second, with the chairman's indulgence, I don't know if you want to do it now or later.
I don't know what you're going to do.
Just explain that, how the bill is built and why.
I think that's a good time.
Yes.
I think it's a good
Thank
time.
You.
There,
later?
The
section, or
now.
The section of law we're discussing now, or the section of bills we're discussing now, current statute. Back in 87, I believe it was, when CRCs were first discussed, there was a number of points in the statute included relative to whether private facilities could be in or out of state and a whole host of other things relative specifically to CRCs. What we've done is tried to clean that statute up a little bit. And opened a door that perhaps learning the lesson that no good deed goes unpunished. Secondly, there's language currently in the law relative to the state can they can give the municipality a state facility to run, but it doesn't say that they can lease prison space from municipality. We're correcting that in Section 2. Then Section 3 and 4 talk about pre-approval of either a lease or a lease purchase contract under the codes that require the legislature to do that. That takes an uncodified act by the legislature. So that's why those are not codified.
Well, I appreciate it. DeWitt's never too busy to give me a thorough explanation of these matters. The reason I ask is if the amendment said the commissioner may not enter an agreement to provide necessary facilities under, and it seems to me under there is the crux of the matter. When it's under A, it may or may not have an effect on soft beds, but when it's under Sections 3 and 4, and I couldn't make that more clear because I didn't have a statute number to put, but if it's under Sections 3 or 4, these lease purchase, these private facilities, then we're being very clear on what we're conditioning. And it seemed to me buttressed by the fact that the title of Section 4, Notice and Approval of a Lease Purchase Agreement, we're exactly providing for that, more notice and more power to approve or disapprove. So it's almost a conceptual friendly amendment, if there are a way, and I don't know the way, to make it apply to sections of this bill, then we would be sure we didn't have any intended consequences. I don't know whether we do or not.
Well, anticipating this might be a problem, we had talked about it in staff that you could amend after line 18, after the word act, nor does it apply to correctional facilities of less than 100 bed capacity, which would take care of anything except jails and prisons. None of those halfway houses are that big.
If I could
just...
Yeah,
they are.
Just a couple more. That was on that, and that makes a lot of sense, Mr. Chairman. The Representative Roeckberg also has, I think, more grounding than I do, than some of the members of the committee, on alcohol regulation issues. And I asked him during an aside, I know that there are similar provisions for the approval of a range for a new bar, a change in an existing license. So it's certainly not an unheard of provision in areas where the public safety is possibly threatened, or at least is concerned there. When my dad was last in town, we went to a pizza parlor that was getting its new license, and it had to go around. They could do it. It can be done. It may be a little more unusual than your average election on precinct boundaries and at certain times, but there's nothing that makes it prohibitive. I don't know that from regulatory experience. I just know it from eating a pizza.
Senator Berkowitz.
I was going to stand up and say the same thing that Representative Croft just said, and I'm going to say it anyway, which is, I think if there were some kind of friendly amendment that would differentiate between hard and soft beds in here, that would eliminate much of the concern. Because essentially we're just talking about hard bed facilities.
If that's findable. Representative Bundy.
Well, and I understand, I certainly support the notion of soft beds and more economical way to do with, to deal with people who aren't immediate or who aren't classified as needing incarceration in a hard bed. I was about to say that they aren't a threat to the public, but I don't think we can say just because they're in a soft bed they're not a threat to the public. And more than even hard beds, I think soft beds should be subjected to community site selection. The point that Representative Croft makes about liquor license, Representative Roeckberg, I'm sure, would have something to say about a soft bed facility going in across the street from Northwood Elementary School. I think soft beds where people can and do walk away need site selection as much or more than hard bed facilities. So I cannot speak definitively that this would stop the building of soft beds. I don't want to do that, but I certainly would support site selection, community site selection on soft beds as well as hard beds.
Representative Roeckberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to those points about public notification in elections, for example, my knowledge is based on the Title 21 implementation in the municipality of Anchorage, where when there is a zoning change or a conditional use, which is like a liquor license, then there are letters of information sent out to areas within a particular radius, to each property owner within their radius, so who is a property owner would have the right to, and does now, is afforded the opportunity to write back a comment or saying whether they approve or disapprove of this particular zoning activity or planning board activity, for example. So that does occur, although it's just the registered property owners that are allowed to do that within a finite area. So, but I think what you're contemplating here would be a little more difficult because you have to look at every registered voter, and I don't know if there's anything like that. Because there is a differentiation between a property owner and like a registered voter, which apparently I think would have to qualify under your idea here. So I see a large, almost mechanical problem. And apparently here, your amendment doesn't speak to who has that authority to even put on the election that Representative James brought up.
It does.
Unless I'm missing it there, okay. And then, but Mr. Chairman, one thing that, and I understand what you're trying to get at here, but the way I look at it right now, it seems to me that, and I even think, in spite of what's been happening in the press, but I think the municipality of Anchorage is demonstrated that they have the ability to react to the public will in terms of the slight selection situation. I mean, even in the exact fact pattern we have before Anchorage and the controversy in the southern part of the community, not necessarily the initiative process is the right way to do it. However, I still think that the municipal assembly there has the ability to deny any construction or award of any project on that particular thing under P&Z and also building permits. There's any number of methodologies in which the public will can be brought forward on that project. So I think that what you're doing here with the amendment is like an unfunded mandate, hors d'oeuvres, to an area to do something that I think they're absolutely capable of doing. I mean, one thing I would suggest is the ultimate friendly amendment by moving it out of that statutory thing, but also excluding the words demunicipal or and taking it out of the municipalities and leaving it in areas that aren't even, I don't have the protections and safeguards that municipal governments have, so whether that really includes much of the state or not, I don't know. But I guess my biggest objection to the whole amendment, Mr. Chairman, is that I think that the municipal governments of the state of Alaska have adequate public hearing processes in place to protect themselves, and I think that's important. I don't want, like you, I share that desire to make sure that the public has adequate input. And I think the plot process is still being played out in Anchorage to a very large degree. And I would assure you that my district is very near your district, and the people in my district share many of the concerns that your folks do. So, I mean, I don't think there is an appropriate area. Matter of fact, if you wanted to restrict the geographic boundaries of South Anchorage and move the line from Diamond up to International, I'd be happy to vote for that. But I think we have to be very careful here with the language we're bringing forward here that might affect other areas of the law. But I'll stop.
Representative James.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been an interesting discussion. And my very first statement that I had concerned with this amendment still has not been addressed, and that is that I'm trying to visualize the process that we would go through to establish a contract with somebody to build a prison. This doesn't provide any opportunity to ever get there. And I feel very sensitive about the issue of finding a location. And fact is, I spoke to Margo yesterday when she was here, where we have people that want one. Why are not we focusing on that? Because that seems to be the biggest hurdle to get over to ever get any more bed space. If a person wanted to be realistic about this, I would think that we could visualize that an RFP would go out and there would be several bidders come in with their offer, and included in their offer would be a location, and that it might be sensible to say the commissioner can't, if the commissioner enters into an agreement, it has to be subject to approval of the location by the community or by the municipality or by something like that. But to say the commissioner has to go out and find a place first before they can put out an RFP, which I think that's what this says, then I have a problem with that because it limits the selection of the land that it will be put on. The commissioner could choose a piece of land if it was privately owned or a city owned or something, they'd have to make an arrangement with whether or not that land is even procurable. So my problem with this amendment has nothing to do with the intent. I agree with your intent. I just don't believe it's the right way to do it. And one suggestion, how long do you think it's going to take us to get through all these amendments?
At this rate?
And the reason I say that, Mr. Chairman, is that would it be possible for me to work with you on this and change some language to make it workable? If not, I feel like, because I'd like to make you happy, Mr. Chairman. and I really feel like I can't support this like it is, because I don't think it provides for a process.
Representative Bundy and Croft.
Well, Mr. Chairman, making you happy is not one of the priorities of my life.
I've noticed. Everything flows downhill.
But I do feel compelled to comment that people in my district do not share the confidence of some other Anchorage area legislators about the municipal ability to deal fairly with its citizens.
I think that 9-2 vote. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again,
Hillside paranoia.
I know that in the school site selection process, which I've viewed and my wife's been involved in, the typical procedure is we have a number of different locations that are possible. The people who are bidding take options on that. You don't have to buy it and put up a building and hope that they come, though they in other parts of this country, that has happened. Arizona had put up a private facility and then said, do you want to put people in? But you don't have to go all through that. You get an option on it, you put your bid together, and they choose both the site and the project somewhat together. I don't think there's anything in this language that prohibits that. In fact, it sort of facilitates it. You pick what would be the best site, and then if that site is selected through an appropriate process, you pick it and you confirm with the people in the area that that's okay. You're both picking, as Representative James talked about, let's look at the entire horizon so we can see here's an area that really wants it. Look at all the options, pick the best site, and then make sure you pick the right one by allowing the voters in that area to say, no, oops, you made a mistake.
Representative Berkowitz.
My turn to throw in 2 cents here. I read this entirely differently. I think the commissioner can just say, hey, I'm looking for a private a place for a prison. Anyone have any good ideas for a site? And that's what initiates means. I don't see anything more sinister than that in this language.
I agree with you. I can't see this restriction that we keep hearing about. But Representative James.
Let me ask you this then, Mr. Chairman. Let's do a for instance. And let's say that the commissioner has initiated a site selection process. Then are we expecting the property owners of various sites to come forward and say, look, my property is available for a site? Or are we looking for the potential bidders to build a construction and facility? Are we expecting them to come forward with a site selection? And let's say that if she initiates a request for a site selection process and somebody has a nice piece of property here they'd really like to sell, and so they come forward and other people come forward, and then all of a sudden, okay, she selects this site, she or he, whoever it is, and so this person who owns this property is really happy because his site selection, then she puts out an RFP for people to build and operate a facility on that site. Boy, does he have a deal. How much do you think he can charge for that property? Because the price just went up.
Another possible scenario. This same person decides that there's going to be a prison. They need to have a 600 or 700 or 800. And so there is a site selection process. It's not saying that she or whoever the commissioner may be picks this property. There's notification. We are going to build a 600-bed prison. They may get 2 potential sites, they may get 200, but it's then that they start weeding. But to say that it's going to be Jones House over here that's selected, I don't think that's the way they would go about that. That's not the way it's normally done. They find those areas, the pluses and the minuses, and they get it down to some workable number that, because of various reasons, these areas or that area won't be good, but these half a dozen will be. And then they find out, are those half a dozen workable?
I'd like to respond to that, because I think if you're building a school or you're building a hospital or you're building something else, you'll have a lot of offers. I think that if you're going to build a corrections facility, you might get a lot of offers. I think they'll be too far away from town for people to be happy. I think that the whole process has to come down together, the site selection and the whole thing. There has to be a time in there where the people have something to say about what's in their area. But somehow or other, I'd like to put that burden on the person who's bidding for the process, and let them, they have to choose a place that meets the muster of the people. And so I just think that, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, maybe this doesn't say that the site selection is the very first thing, but it seems to me like that unless the state is planning to purchase any piece of property that they're going to select as a site, and that the price and the cost of that piece of property is part of the selection process so that they secure the property in that same action, then we're setting up a situation that's going to be unworkable. And you could do that. We could say the state has to go out and buy the land or secure the land or put it on some state land, but I don't think we want to do that either.
You had indicated a desire to work with this.
Yeah, be happy to.
Mr. Chairman? Just to notify you that I do have a 3:00 appointment, so I don't know how long you had planned to continue today, but I hate to suggest we start another one. Let us just let this one soak for a minute or two, but perhaps
perhaps not a bad idea, Mr. Chairman. If you move it to the bottom of the calendar here, maybe we could maybe something would percolate.
Okay, we'll put this at bay, and I think we have an amendment by Representative Rokeberg. Oh. 837 Chenoweth, 3-14-97.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We sort through here, I think we can end up in the right spot. I appreciate you taking
it. It doesn't have his name on it, but it's...
Yes, right. Okay. It's K-37. First page is... Page 1, lines 9 through 11. Actually, Mr. Chairman, if I could direct the committee's attention to page 2, line 17. This is really the gist of this particular amendment, and the rest of all are all conforming language. What this does, Mr. Chairman, is really quite simple. It provides that...
Are you on page 2 or on page 1?
I'm on page 2, excuse me, of K-37.
Yeah, it says...
You're on page 2?
Right. Oh. Line 17. That's... Are you in the right one?
Well, I've got K-37, but it's page 1, lines 9 to 11.
So I'm on page 2 of the amendment.
He's turned over and talking about... He's talking about something else.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Page 2 of the amendment.
All right.
On line 17 is really the,
okay,
the substance.
Excuse
of
me.
Right,
page
that's all right.
5.
Yes.
Right, it's page 5, line 21.
Okay.
Following male prisoners, it says, if only one correction facility is designed, construction, under notice and approval given in A of this section, however, if more than one correction facility is designed and construction under the notice and approval given in A of this section, at least one correctional facility must be limited to confining female prisoners only. So what this does, it allows, under the existing limits and caps under the bill, the design of one or more than one facility, and And if there is more than one facility, make sure that's a women's facility, because we need it in this state. And, Mr. Chairman, the reason I brought this forward, if I was so presumptuous to say, is that it's a plan that I would like to see implemented in this state. We finally got a one-pager plan from the administration under your tutelage, Mr. Chairman, last week. And I suggest that we do need a separate women's facility here in the state. And I know the people at the Highland Meadow Creek area are concerned about the change of that particular facility. So I would think that I think there's adequate funds, quite frankly, for the construction of a 400-bed jail in some large municipal area in the state of Alaska that may have a definite need for it, as well as a women's facility anywhere it may be located, to our heart's content, that might fit inside this bill. So, but nevertheless, Mr. Chairman, all that my amendment does is specify that one, if there's more than one facility built under this bill, it could be a women. So it does not bind anybody's hands. It gives us some flexibility and perhaps, Mr. Chairman, some guidance about how they should go about their business.
Mr. Chairman,
I just want to see what the sponsor had to say about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while I appreciate it, Representative Ruckberg's intention here, I did take the liberty to visit with, because the department has brought forth to us, in fact, even in the supplemental budget, a request to use $2.3 million to convert Highland to a female facility, saying that it would meet then with the needs or the query fines and requirements. I spoke with Mr. Volland, Phil Volland, the attorney for the query plaintiffs, and it was news to him that the department could utilize the funds to make settlement in that regard. In fact, the female facility has not been a very large topic of discussion with Mr. Volland or the plaintiffs and the department. It appears, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rothberg, that the women's issue is more an issue being brought forward by the commissioner than it is by the overcrowding or the plaintiffs. That's in total candor with what the reaction, the reading, and the personal conversation and letter, which I'd be glad to share with you, which I received from Mr. Volland.
Representative Bundy?
Pass.
Representative Berkowitz?
I'm just, maybe Representative Roper can help me with this. What is the rough numbers of female prisoners and the need, and what does the commissioner have to say about it? I mean, I would presume she'd be in a better position to understand than Mr. Volland.
Well, Mr. Chairman, quite frankly, Mr. Berkowitz, it's a good question. I think there's other people here in the room who can answer the raw number question better, but I would suggest that that in my tenure on the Corrections Subcommittee, where we've had oversight of that particular budget and their operations for several years, that there has been indications of the plan for the conversion of Highland Mountain Meadow Creek to a women's facility for some time. And quite frankly, my inspection of facilities around the state, quite on a personal basis, seeing, for example, here in Lemon Creek in Juneau, the fact that there are female prisoners on a almost co-ed basis here, I find quite disturbing. You know, and the need for a women's facility in this state is paramount and quite important. I mean, in its total effect in terms of clarity is that any additional beds that are constructed should take pressure off other facilities. And I would like to see one centralized women's facilities to meet the needs of those particular prisoners constructed in such a way and under this privatized bill that doesn't create a financial burden to the state of Alaska, allows us to meet our responsibilities to those prisoners and to meet whatever responsibilities we may think we have under Clary. And that's the only reason I brought forward this amendment. There are several hundreds. I know there's, what, over 335? What are we talking about? No.
10% roughly?
Yeah, I think it's 500 or 600, isn't there, female prisoners in the state? Is it that high? I'm trying to remember right now. I don't have the facts at hand. But if it's that high, but that includes the misdemeanors and some other levels.
Mr. Chairman.
Pre-trial and all that type of thing. But in terms of hard beds, I'm not... That would be that's a good question. I'm not, I think there are, Meadow Creek has how many?
Five.
65. 70 or more capacity.
Yeah, so it could be anywhere in, well, from 100 to 200 hard beds, maybe. I'm just guessing right now, roughly. Thank
you. Anybody?
You know, I certainly understand the need for adequate housing for female prisoners. Alaskans are equal opportunity offenders. But I don't see anything in the bill that predetermines that if a private prison were built, it would not be a female facility. It seems like the demand has to be there, and then the supply will occur. While this may just be permissive, it seems like it's strongly encouraging that the amendment may be permissive, strongly encouraging that the commissioner now take this as legislative intent that the next private facility be female or for female inmates. And I'm not sure I'm excited about tying the commissioner's hands about choosing. Yeah, we've put out an RFP and several proposals come in, and one's for a male facility, one's for a female, one's juvenile, whatever it is, that I think the commissioner has to be able to decide which is, as we've pointed out here, we don't know the exact numbers and the details, which is the facility that is the has the best opportunity to serve Alaska's needs.
Well, I have a bit of a concern that we're concerned about putting things in statute. If we put this in statute and we have a female facility built, and then we go back out sometime in the future, as we would, Representative Mulder showed us in earlier testimony, that we've got an 8% add-on every year, that the next time we go out for two, then one of those. So in effect, two of the next three facilities could be, if this is adopted, could be female facilities.
That's correct. I mean, if this mandates it be a male facility, if more than one can be built under the authorization here, then it could, I want it to be female. I've just been handed some figures. We have 106 sentenced and 108 unsentenced female prisoners in the system as of the 12th of March. So the necessity to keep that facility near where the majority of the judicial activity is occurring seems to be apparent. But having a separate facility or even built in conjunction with it for common usage may have some merit. But in the point that Representative Bundy makes about this being a policy statement, I think is certainly my intent. Right.
Well, Representative Roper, I can certainly subscribe to the policy intent, but my point is that if, as we just talked about, if, I mean, there's nothing in this bill that says the next prison up might not be a female prison. It just says we're going to allow a prison to be built. It doesn't say where or which gender. My point is that when you put it in statute, it lasts and lasts, and so that you have gone out now and you've decided that you build a female prison, the next following that, if you happen to decide you need two, by this, one of those next two would have to also be female, so that the last three built, two of which may actually be female. Is that what we really want to do in statute?
You got me confused, Mr. Chairman.
Right. It's not that hard to follow. Stay with me now. By the numbers. If there is a time when a female prison is built, you're with me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And following that, we decide that now it's time not for just one new prison after that, it's time for two prisons. This would require that one of those following two prisons would be female, right? Wouldn't that mean that of the last three prisons built, two of them would be female?
I think my understanding of the bill, Mr. Chairman, was that this was like non-codified statutory authority to proceed under these caps, and that's what I'm thinking of. We'd have to reauthorize the bill if we maxed up the authorization under this bill. Maybe I'm not understanding the bill properly. If the bill sponsor could help me out, is that not true, that what we're doing here is only authorizing these caps, what are they, 150
million and up to 800 or 1,000 prisoners, is that?
Or there's we're authorizing one facility. Mr. Chairman?
A new facility.
One.
Right, but we're leaving the caps are the same. So, I mean, and they're all, and that's the intention here. So we wouldn't be, you couldn't possibly build more than one or two facilities out of these caps, I wouldn't think.
Okay, now this becomes statute, though, and then is there a repealer 3 years from now or 5 years from now? I mean, you've got this thing hanging in statute saying we authorized the building of a prison back in 97. Any Croft.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure yet what I think of the women's prison issue, but I was very happy to see Representative Rookberg's amendment in the other areas, because it had disturbed me for a while that this bill said A, one only, and pursuing competition in this, even if I worry that this may not be the proper area for market competition, at least it should be that, right, if that's the proposal. So, with your indulgence, I'd just separate the question into 1A being everything else and 1B being the woman's.
Excuse me, if you will, just one moment while we change tapes.